Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Now I feel like the grouping of women who are moms and are artists is really like a stand against what is the attacks that women are feeling. Like there's so much, these men, I think, who want to control women's lives. And I feel like a show like this sort of says, you know, you want us to have more babies? Is that what you want? It's not going to stop us from making more art. Like, this is testament to that. People with babies create, women create babies, and they create art. I don't think there's any stopping, you know, women or anybody who's being held down. Because in the end, really, we know from history of all kinds of people, you hold them down, that is when they will thrive the most.
Welcome to the third iteration of our community-wide exhibition called Painting at Night. We are so thrilled to be hosted by Collarworks Gallery in Troy, New York, and to be recording this episode today in the gallery amidst the work and many of the artists who are here. It's super exciting. I just wanted to give a special shout out and thank you to Robert Shane, Elizabeth Dubin, and Emily Nola, and others from Collarworks and the Troy area, including Claire Sherwood and other local artists who helped bring this exhibition here and provide some on-the-ground comfort and support and logistics. We really appreciate you all. I wanted to take a quick moment to honor the brevity of this moment in time. Yesterday in the U.S., Roe versus Wade was overturned, and it was powerful to be in community last night, processing our rage and our grief together. I was brought back to the same situation 8 months ago when we were in Fort Wayne, Indiana for the 2021 version of Painting at Night. A beautiful memory comes to my mind of 12 or so artist mothers packed into a hotel room late at night, sharing wine, and swapping boldly stories of birth and abortion. It was a sacred and powerful space to hear these experiences from women I so deeply admire. And I just wanted to hold space for a collective pause for the heartbreak, for the rage, and the despair that we are all feeling right now. So may we rise together to seek justice and reproductive rights and autonomy for the women in this country and around the world. Okay, and with that, let me turn the mic on to Judith Braun, the incredible juror for this show. Judith is a force, and it was such a delight to work with her for this entire exhibition. We had so much fun going back and forth. Judith spent an amazing amount of time and put a lot of labor into making the decisions about this show. So I really, really appreciate all the work that you put in, Judith. Please tune in, if you have not, to episode 130 of the podcast, where you can hear all about Judith, her life and work, her journey moving to and from New York and the Albany area, and her experience as an artist. So to start, Judith, can you tell me what your experience was like jurying the 2022 Artist Mother Painting at Night exhibition?
Well, thank you for having me. You made me cry with the whole not about me, what you were saying about women in the moment. It's really moving. Jurying the show was pretty amazing. Really, I had no idea that so many women were going to submit work. So it was like, I think it was 450 or more mm-hmm. artists, each with a lot of work submitted. So it was a little bit daunting at first, but I feel like what happened is that little by little, I feel like every piece here, ended up going through the mill. Like, mm-hmm. it had to be really good to mm-hmm. get through that much elimination because, you know, there are like thousands of pieces mm-hmm. and whatever there are, 70 pieces here or something like that. So I feel like it was, you know, it was an honor to do it. And I feel like I've been on the other end of that, submitting to things all the time. So I feel like it was also fun and exciting to give that gift to people that mm-hmm. got in, because I feel like I'm just one person, but I'm bringing with it, having looked at a lot of work mm-hmm. and whatever my experience is and everything. And I chose the pieces because I think that every piece in here mm-hmm. is a great piece of art. So I congratulate everybody in it, and it was great working with you too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We didn't know each other.
No.
And we got together
just jumped right in.
We got together on that Zoom, and I'm a control person, so I wasn't that sure that I was gonna like this kind of talking about it back and forth.
Yeah.
But
I remember
so
that.
Much fun.
You were like, you want to talk with me about this?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes, Judith, yeah. I want to talk with you.
Yeah. For everybody's information, though, about this, in the way they honored my decisions, like I picked the show. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, you know, a lot of people pulling it apart for all their different reasons. So, but it still took a kind of discussion, because mm-hmm. sometimes you don't know what you think.
Right.
So you think, I don't know whether I think this or I think that. And then, you know, sometimes you love something at first, you're like kind of seduced by it in a way, and then you kind of lose interest after 3 weeks of looking mm-hmm. at so many other things. And talking together helped me do that.
Yeah, so, and I just wanted to say too that one of the things that I loved about the way that you juried this show was you kind of let these little collections develop. And I know that our past juror, Melanie Cooper Pennington, also had that experience where I think maybe you go in thinking you're looking for this one way to view this exhibition, and then just the range of work and the diversity of experiences that are present within the overall collective of the community of folks making work and submitting, you know, it has to be these plural, you know, kind of avenues of viewing this whole concept. And so you kind of, you know, have this collection over here and this work kind of comes together, and it becomes this little network within the whole exhibition of sort of different, you know, views and different ranges of experiences, different range of mediums that kind of form these little families within the larger
right.
community, which I think is
interesting
just
to use the word family
yeah.
in this context.
Absolutely. Okay, and last question for you, Judith. Just why do you think an exhibition like this is important? And specifically, why do we need to show work by artists who are parents and share the maternal experience in the art world?
Well, it's an interesting question, because at first, I think I often don't like shows that categorize the artists by things that are other than just that they're artists, mm-hmm. you know? So I usually resist that, and sometimes I haven't wanted to be in a show that's like women artists who do this or do that. Mm-hmm. But I have changed my mind around it over time, and had initially even proposed doing a show of artists that I knew when I was living in New York that were also, they were really good, serious artists, and they were also moms. And it started to occur to me that this is like, you know, a really difficult thing, and wouldn't we like to do a show around it, which evolved into being this kind of submission thing and not mm-hmm. just my friends. Mm-hmm. And now, I mean, like what you were talking about, now I feel like the grouping of women who are moms and are artists is really like a stand mm-hmm. against what is the attacks that women are feeling. Like there's so much, these people who, I mean, these men, I think, who want to control women's lives. And I feel like a show like this sort of says, You know, you want us to have more babies? Is that what you want? Mm-hmm. It's not going to stop us from making more art. Mm-hmm. Like, this is testament to that. People with babies create, women create mm-hmm. babies, and they create art. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any stopping, you know, women or anybody who's being held down. Because mm-hmm. in the end, you know, really, we know from history of all kinds of people, you hold them down, that is when they will thrive mm-hmm. the most. So that's how I feel now. This is just a testament, you know, do it more, more women, more babies. If that's what they want, who cares? We want babies. We have them. We don't have them. We are going to make mm-hmm. art.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Judith. Thank you again for your great work.
Thank you guys.
The show.
All. I hope you all love this show.
We do. We love it. Okay, so now we're going to welcome three artists to the conversation. All three artists have work in this exhibition and have traveled here to see it and be a part of this podcast episode. So I just want to thank Jacqueline Stryker, Tamara Zibner, and Sandy Clafford for being here and being part of this conversation. I'm so excited to have you talk about your work and your life and your experience. So before we begin digging into your art, I would love for you to give the audience a little bit more perspective just about who you are as people. So starting with Sandy, can you tell me where you're from, how many kids you have, and any additional roles or responsibilities that you have on your plate besides being an artist?
Okay, so my name is Sandy Clafford, as you already know. I'm also known as the Queen's Artillery on Instagram. That's the moniker I go under. I am a interdisciplinary visual artist. I have two children, teenage children, 15, 17. Yeah. And I'm based out of Brooklyn.
Okay. Any other jobs? Full-time artist? What else is on your plate?
Currently, now I am a full-time artist.
Good for you.
This is my focus now.
I love it. Okay, down to you, Jacqueline. Can you talk a little bit about the same questions?
I also am in Brooklyn, in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, and I have one daughter. She's six, Poppy. And I, let's see, other jobs. I work for the School of Visual Arts. I manage their low residency MFA program, and I teach in that program as well. So I'm balancing, that's a full-time job. And then, you know, being a parent and making work.
It's a lot. Yeah. Tamara, what about you?
I'm Tamara Zibners, and I live in Roswell, New Mexico. I live at the Roswell Artists in Residency in Roswell, New Mexico. My husband's the director there, Larry Bob Phillips, and our son Henry is four. We've been there for 4 years, and since that time, my main job is being a mom and an artist. I do also get to be a mother sometimes to the artists in residence because they have questions being transplanted to Roswell. And other than that, my husband and I have cobbled together some rentals, so I manage those, and that mm-hmm. has kept me from not having to have a full-time job.
Awesome.
Again.
Okay, so let's dig into talking about your life and a little bit more about who you are as an artist. Starting back with you, Tamara, can you share with me something about your childhood that you feel like connects to your life as an artist today? I'm wondering if you've always wanted to be an artist.
Yeah, I've definitely always been a creative, and I've actually always battled that. It's the sensible part of my brain wants me to give it up, and then the artist part of my brain says, if I do, I'll just drown or something, you know. So, but for me, I think as a child, it was all about music. Mm. So I would rock out in my bedroom to my older sister's music for their rock and roll albums, and I played piano, and I sang all the time. And I, when I think of my trajectory of loving art, I really would give music credit. It was album art and, you know, stuff like that that like taught me culture, and it gave me my identity and my place in the world. So it's still, music's just as important to me as visual art, as is writing and all forms of art. It just fuels me. So
yeah, it's funny how for so many artists or just people, music, I don't know, it's like in homes more than visual art is. Uh-huh. And so for a lot of visual artists, I think that is kind of like the, at least the way that your brain kind of starts processing like creative energy and, you know, people are making things that are interesting to listen to. What about things that maybe would be interesting to look at? And yeah.
Yeah, sure. And for me, it was also like, I mean, as a 13, 15-year-old, like the riot girl, like that kind of identity that started shaping my political views, all of that stuff, even if I'm not, you know, writing slut on my arm anymore, like that I was as a 15-year-old. But, you know, that's my identity. Like it gave me a path of what I believed in. So
I love that.
Yeah.
Okay, back to you, Jacqueline. Can you share with me something about your childhood that you feel like connects to your life as an artist today?
Yeah, I mean, I think like many children, I was, you know, always drawing, coloring, making. I was always really into pattern, and I had like I would take, you know, the catalogs that you get of like clothing. And I would just fill sketchbooks with drawings that were like based on the clothing and the patterns from those books. And so, I always did want to be an artist. And I feel like there was this sort of naivete on the part, in a way, on the part of my parents that they were fine encouraging that. it was like as long as you go to college, you can do whatever you want to do. And it was like there was no, oh well, you need to be a lawyer, you need to, you know, you need to do something practical. And my great grandmother became an artist later. She took up painting and became an artist later in life. And my parents always referred to her as an artist. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was really cool. I was like, oh yeah, my great grandma's an artist. Now I want to be an artist. Mm-hmm. So, which was cool.
That's great. Sandy, what about you? Connection between life as an artist and your childhood?
Well, mine was like the antithesis of yours, you know. I always, not to sound cliche, but I always knew when I was younger that I was like a lot better, you know, because people make a big deal about my artwork. Like, you did this? And it's like, yeah, I did that. And I'm six, you know. And my parents, you know, they enjoyed decorating the house with the things that I made, you know. Mm-hmm. But I felt like as I progressed in my growth, you know, you get older, it didn't seem practical for my parents, or rather just my mom, you know, that I wanted to be an artist. She didn't necessarily see the value in it. Mm-hmm. So it was like, okay, well, we like nurse for you, so let's, we're gonna go that avenue. And it's like, nah, I don't really, you know, like this. And there was much pushback, but there was a pause for me, you know, because motherhood came like at 21. So it was like, I know I wanted to go to school. And I kind of fought against it, even though I didn't want to be a nurse. When I first started school, it was business. And I'm like, I hate this. I don't want to do this. And I'm like, do I do this for me or do I do it for everybody else? And I was like, yeah, I'm going to go in the direction of art. And I was much happier. So yeah, I mean, I wish I would have had, don't get me wrong, you know, now that I'm older and they can see the rewards or the things, my accolades, now they're like, oh, okay, now we get it, you know, especially because they're, my parents are, I'm first born generation here, my parents are from Central America, so for them, this was not something that they thought was lucrative, so you know, now that they can see, it's like, oh, you worked with Grey Goose. Oh, that's great. It's like, yeah, because, you know, these are illustrations. It's art. You know, they're supportive.
Yeah.
You know, they are, you know, my support team, especially with my kids. So I didn't get that so early, but now I have that and I'm happy.
That's awesome. Can you describe your art for somebody who may not have seen it before and talk a little bit about the medium that you work in, your process? Start back to you, Sandy.
So Normally, I do illustrations, and I've been painting, and I've just started within the last past 2 years doing oil. I work with a lot of different mediums, but my primary focus is painting, digital, and mixed media assemblage. So I'm kind of like trying to step out of the box and not just use one thing to interpret the things that I do. So there's for my painting, there's a lot of intricate parts mm-hmm. that, you know, when it unites, it's a bigger picture here, but there, it's a lot.
What are some of the main ideas that you're exploring in your work?
Identity, culture, empowerment. Mm-hmm. So my portrait, that was made during the pandemic. This was something that I had previously thought about, but I had no creative art direction. And I think it was because I was so consumed with my job, my 9-to-5, mm-hmm. that I wasn't able to focus. And it was like, by the time I got home and I'm done mothering, I didn't have the capacity mm-hmm. to put conceptually into my work. Mm-hmm. But when we had that like break, that reset, I was like, oh, okay, this is something I'm going to revisit. And, I was changing, so I cut my hair, and then it was like every day I'm living out of my room at this computer doing this work. I got bored, started taking photos of myself, and started feeling more empowered mm-hmm. and feeling good about making the next transition in my life mm-hmm. to being a full-time visual artist, and
here we are.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the name that you've kind of chosen for your artist identity, the Queen's Artillery.
Yeah.
Right? Can you talk about that?
So when I first came up with that name, I never really liked using my full name. I liked kind of like being, you know, behind the scenes, and mm-hmm. I didn't want to use Sandy Clafford. It was like, it's not exciting. It doesn't, you know.
At least people can pronounce it.
Yes. So I was like, what do you want this? I want this to reflect me and everything that I do. So I thought about my queenly attributes, and I said, let me put a little play on this, and it's artillery. And I'm like, oh, okay, you have the art. And then, you know, my arsenal is my paintbrush, my mm-hmm. pencil, you know, whatever means I use to create. So that's what it was. And that's pretty much just a moniker that I use to represent me.
I love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jacqueline, can you describe your art for someone who hasn't seen it before and talk a little bit about your process and medium?
Yeah, sure. I'll start just by saying my background's in printmaking, and I use a lot of print in my work, and I begin by making materials, or at least by applying patterns to materials. So I start everything with a hand drawing. I reference a lot of domestic textiles. Right now I've been working a lot with vintage quilt patterns, and I'll hand draw that, scan it in, turn that into a matrix for print. Then I might draw a little more on top of it before eventually printing it. I work right now a lot with risograph, which is sort of like this antiquated office technology that is a hybrid between a screen print and an offset lithograph. And then I also use screen print, and I've, you know, monotype, and I have done a lot of woodcut in the past, and I think it's something I'll probably come back to. The work is brightly colored, and it's modular. So I work in little pieces. Part of that is dictated by my background in printmaking, where you're always limited by the size of a press. Mm-hmm. So, or in the case of my risograph machine, it's a 12 by 18 is the max size. And that's inclusive of borders. I take these little pieces and then I tile them together either through collage or sewing, and then make larger works from there.
So. Awesome. Yeah. Thank you. Tamara, can you talk a little bit about your work and your process?
Yes. So my background is in photography, and that's my skill set. I love working on the computer. I loved working in the darkroom. So my current work, when a person looks at it, it's as far removed from photography as, you know, a sculpture would be. So that's often lost, I think, with the viewer. But that is the foundation of my process. So with my current work that's in the show, but I have multiple pieces that are very large scale, and it's all digital paper, and it's very saturated, and it's assembled with matte medium. And so there are these like highly cumbersome, awkward, nonsensical like objects as far as I see them. The process is an arbitrary formula that I've created to give me peace in my studio. I started making this current series of work, which I call Hold You, about my son very specifically, which is why it's an honor to be in a show like this, because I don't, you know, my work hasn't always been focused on motherhood, but that's my story and my time right now. And so I got a great, nice big studio, when I took on the role of just being a stay-at-home mom. The light bulb went off at some point that as much as I wanted this special time with my child, I'm a selfish person and I need my time to myself. And that...
Just a person.
Yeah. I'm a woman that likes my space, you know? Yeah. And I was being grabbed and pulled on all day long. And so that kind of... balance or lack of balance. I liked the idea that I craved this child so much. I wanted him so badly and I wanted to be away from him so badly. And so I decided I would photograph a moment that we touched. Just like think of this time, just try to think of like when we touch, that won't always be the case and how much like that actual physical touch is so important to me. And so the work is born from, iPhone photos of a moment where he and I are touching, like in any context, lying in bed or him trying to grab at me or something. And then I cut that composition down to what I like. I make a digital drawing of it. Then I color it in and then I change the saturation, but all of the colors from an original photograph, I like this idea of this actual document in time that like we were together. And then the work from there, I've been printing it about 44 inches square with a digital printer, and then I cut it up based on the contour lines or the colors within the image. And then all these pieces I form into these large-scale collages and small-scale. So I really do like both, but there's something about, especially during the pandemic, a lot of this work, it started pre-pandemic, but was during, you know, it's just, I'm in my studio, I listen to shit all day long, and a lot of it's not good. I'm a news junkie, and it's just the mass of, like, the balance of my simple domesticity and motherhood with what I think in the world. And so I think of these works as these tapestries of just, yeah, like a patchwork of the chaos of... what goes on in my brain. And I like that about them. I like that even though the foundation is within photography, they don't have borders, they're pinned to the wall, they're not a series, you know, all these things that feel so stale in like a typical photographic art world kind of process. So
can you tell us a little bit more about the specific piece you have in the show, if there's anything you want to say about that?
Yeah.
What's the title?
The title of this piece is Creamsicle Gonna Get You. Gonna get you, maybe. And whenever I title my work, it's really like a stream of conscious kind of diarrhea, and then I just stick with one. And the creamsicle part, I was thinking about it. It's like, for me, a creamsicle is this childhood flavor, which is both like so enticing and so disgusting to me. And that's really like something that I try to achieve in my artwork. I like the color, the piece is approximately 8 by 8 feet. And it's assembled from inkjet paper and matte medium. And that medium makes it like thick and crunchy and messy in its way. And I like that. I'm pinning up on the wall it, like with thumbtacks as like a way of securing it, but it also kind of then almost pushes into some kind of a upholstery or, you know, like like it's almost trying to be a fabric, but it's not. I also, I've shown the piece twice and I have to kind of clip off the edges slightly because of the pinhole. So I like that it kind of shrinks or changes slightly. Like I have to repair it over, you know, time. And so, yeah, it's a very bright, striking piece, and I want the work to, in its way, overwhelm a viewer and give them a chance to kind of peer inside and figure it out. The actual image, which also may be lost on the viewer but is not lost on me, is two hands, which, again, would have been from a photograph of my son, that are grabbing. They're, like, grabbing up.
Awesome, thanks. Yeah. Jacqueline, can you tell us about the work that you have in the show? You have two pieces.
Yes, they're right behind me, although I know no one can see them in the podcast audience. So one piece is called Leftovers, and it's a stretched textile piece, and it was made from smaller risograph printed textiles on cotton that were then sewn, a combination of sewn and no-sew fabric glue together. And then there's some fabric marker on top of those. And I was thinking, and it's called Leftovers because I had been making these other textiles, and those are kind of the leftover scraps, and I put them together to make a new work. And I was thinking a lot about, you know, the like Victorian crazy quilts, and also this idea of making do, but also contrasting that with abundance. My work is super maximalist. It's like embracing clutter and ornamentation, and I like to think of it as like Agnes Martin's nightmare or something. So it's pattern on top of pattern, and so it's that sort of contrast of like there's this like scarcity of fabric that, you know, these scraps of fabric that are being used, but you know, coming together into something greater. And then the other work is called Sampler, and I was making that during the start. I started that during COVID in March 2020. I live in Brooklyn, and we were, you know, on lockdown. I usually do have a separate studio, but at that time, I wasn't in a position to be able to travel to my studio. We also were doing like Zoom school with my daughter, who at that time was in pre-K. So that's intense. My husband and daughter and I all live in a small, you know, railroad apartment. It's like a 1.5 bedroom apartment. So, you know, we're all together on top of each other. So I was just trying to find a way to bring some order to my day and also to feel like I could make something. I could do something for myself. So they're these little 3-inch by 3-inch painting squares. They're gridded. I had some art supplies of my own, but I also was borrowing supplies from my daughter. They're made from gouache and puffy paint. And again, they reference sampler square quilting squares. Mm-hmm. Yeah, quilt backs. So, And I have a couple hundred of them. They're not all on display, but they're made so that they can form a greater object, and they can be moved around, and they can be put in different formations. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thanks. Sandy, can you tell us a little bit more about the piece that you have in the show?
Okay. It's the Queen of Diamonds and Queen of Diamonds Shining on You Hoes. this painting is actually a part of a four painting series called The Predecessors. You know, of course, it features all of the queens in the deck of cards. Mm-hmm. But this one in particular, like I said, I had to revisit the idea with fresh eyes. And normally I was doing paint, so this time I was including fabric, staging, patterns, using dried flowers and just prints. And when I did this during the pandemic, I was able to explore more because my children are older now, mm-hmm. and not having to, I guess, worry about them going outside. We weren't going anywhere. So it's like, hey, I'm here. I don't have to necessarily, and they're older, so I don't have to put my whole attention on you. But I spent my times at night painting and working on these things in hopes that once the pandemic was over, I was going to get to share this with everyone, this rebirth of who I wanted to be, you know, not my 9-to-5, not being just a mom, but wanting to be recognized as an artist. None of the images for these portraitures are sad, but it's, again, there's more of these stoic, strong faces, and everybody's like, smile, and I'm like, no, I don't want to smile. And in a playing deck of cards, you don't see smiling queens. Mm-hmm. So just me adding all these new things to my work, like the fabric and the staging, allowed me to now put into perspective a newer series that is a lot more grander than that one. Mm. But, you know, using back colloquialisms like, you know, shining on you hoes, was just kind of like, you know, to drive home what it is I was feeling and what it represents.
You kind of just answered my next question, which was talking about what does painting at night mean to you? And you literally, you're like, I was painting at night, like in the pandemic. I guess for you to kind of shift that question a little bit, since you just talked about that, which was so great, I'm just wondering about your kids and how they've experienced the identity shift in you, because it is more recent, and, you know, just having them kind of be teenagers and already have gone through like their younger childhood years with you working that 9-to-5, and then you kind of get in the pressure cooker of the pandemic together in Brooklyn, and, you know, it's very intense, and you're like, mom's doing something new here. So I'm a little bit like curious about that transition just for your family, like not just you.
So, I mean, right now, being that everything is just the way it is and the rent is so expensive, mm-hmm. I would like to have a studio space, but I don't currently. So right now, on my newer series, it's like 30 by 40s and better. So now everything is like crowded into our living room, and they're like, I can't watch TV because your canvases are blocking the way. They have been very accommodating, especially because they're older. So it's like my daughter cooks. It's like, I'm focused on getting her detail right because this highlight has to be perfect. And I'm like, I'm going to cook in a little while. And she's like, it's okay. I'm going to go make the chicken. Yeah. You know, my son might come in and he might bring a cup of tea. And, you know, hey, you're going to make me cry.
No, you're going to make me cry.
Just knowing how much I struggled in the past to, like, be a creative but have to devote most of my time to my children, it feels good for them to allow me to be focused in my craft, and be supportive as much as they can, even like coming to my shows. You know, mm-hmm. my son messes with me like, you think you're cool now, right? Because you're on TV. And it's like, stop, please, you know. And just having that relationship with them and them being old enough to understand what's going on in my life, it feels good. But they are very, they're okay with it. You know, even they brag, and it feels good because I feel like I'm starting to phase out being the cool mom. When they're younger, you're like, oh my God, she's my superhero. And then when you get, they get older, it's like, we have to do this, you know? So when they do, you know, low-key brag, like, that's my mom, she's an artist, it feels good. But they have been very supportive of this transition. I even try to get them to be a part of it. With my newer series, the portraiture, I focused on my children. So I have a diptych piece that's hopefully I'll get to display very soon of both of my children. It kind of was like, it creeped them out, but they were like, you know, my daughter's even like, oh, please don't sell this piece until after my sweet 16, because I would like to have this on display. All right. But I'm really happy to be in a better position, you know, just with them being older and having more time.
Okay. Kudos to you for raising kids in an environment that is fluid enough for them to accept you changing your identity. Like, I think that's huge and speaks to like just the way that you must have mothered them. And also that your kids are now able to see and offer nurture back to you is like what we all hope for, right? Like, and just doing it as teenagers, not like when they become parents or, you know, like, I just think that's pretty special. So congrats to you. Hi there. I'm Kaylin Butine.
And I'm Jamie Smith.
And we are popping in to invite you to come check out another great space in the podcast world, one we co-host together, the Thriving Artists Podcast.
The Thriving Artists Podcast offers weekly short episodes where we share tips and strategies to help you thrive in your art career and studio practice.
Episode themes range from sharing information on artist residencies, how to manage your time well, the top things you can do to professionalize your art career, and a lot of focus on our mental health, well-being, and creating systems where we feel empowered to live the lives and art careers that we want.
We hope you will head over to the Thriving Artists Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. Hit subscribe and join us for our weekly episodes. You can also find all of our episodes in video format and see our beautiful faces on our YouTube channel, Thriving Artists. We are here for you. We are cheering you on, and we believe in the work you are doing as thriving artists.
See you there. Jacqueline, can you talk a little bit about what painting at night means to you and how you've kind of made your work and your life as an artist fit within the margins of motherhood?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly it. Like, painting at night is making it fit into the margins of motherhood, or just of, you know, of whatever, of personhood, of you know, having these other identities. And, you know, for me, it's about, you know, finding these, finding scraps of time and using that, whether that's at night or early in the morning or like between meetings, and, you know, and using that time to, you know, claiming that time for myself, and using that to make. It's about claiming space is what painting at night is. So, yeah.
Tamara, let's talk a little bit about compromises. Wondering if in your experience of painting at night, if you have struggled with sort of some of the compromises you've had to make either for yourself as a mother or for yourself as an artist, because we know in this room that those are two very full things that kind of have to exist in a give and take relationship.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the journey into motherhood for me was something I really, really wanted, and it fell in contrast to another thing that I really wanted, which was to be a successful artist. Like, those never seemed, because I also had mentors who, you know, would say things like, well, I want to give my all to my art, and if I had a kid, I want to give my all to my kid, you know, and they didn't have kids. And so I am, I mean, I'm a very caring person. I've just taken my whole last month to be caring for my family right now, extended family and stuff. And that's a break in the studio. And yet I know I'll get back in there and it'll fuel me. Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. My son is 4 right now, and he has started just tantruming like a maniac. And so I've been devouring these parenting books just while I'm working in my studio, listening to them on my AirPods or whatever. And at some point, I realized that I've been like, oh, my son won't sleep. Like, why doesn't he sleep? And then I was like, oh my God, it's not even that he's not a good sleeper. It's that I need that time. Like, if he's not in bed at 9, I'm grumpy, you know? So it's like, it's not about him, it's about me, you know? And so I have to figure, like, come to a peace to where, you know, because when he was a baby, that really was when I got in my studio. He'd go down maybe at 9 and I'd have 2 hours and then I'd go to sleep. Now that he's getting a little older and in school, I can be much more structured and take it like as a day job. And so there's less pressure on that kind of neurotic scheduling of sleep or time. But it's a balance. I mean, he comes in my studio. I mean, one reason I started making the work I am is that he would just rip stuff off the table and step on it, and I didn't want it to go to waste. So then I'm like, well, I guess I could cut it up, you know? So it's like, he is in there a lot, and he loves sitting on my lap while I'm drawing. But I need, you know, at some point, the door is shut, and I have space to myself just to feel, you know. I have one memory of him being a baby. He was like 3 months old, and we were moving because my husband got this job, so we were about to move from Albuquerque, and I was looking through we had a plan to get rid of like half of all of our stuff. And I was going through all these photographs of like my 20s and, you know, traveling and being like, when I would go to the Museum of Modern Art, like at any chance I could, and just stand in front of these pieces and like find myself. And my son was sleeping while I was looking through these photographs, and then he woke up, and it was like it was like a monster was in the house, you know, like I had like suddenly transported back to my old self. And then there he was, and it was like a slap in the face, you know, like, here we are, this is me now, and this is what I want. So gotta, you know, I'll figure it out. But you know, it's kind of interesting, like, because I mean, I love him more than anything.
Love that. Jacqueline, anything you want to say just about the experience of compromise or the tension of the two identities?
Yeah, I mean, I think as, like, for artist mothers, and I'm sure for other folks as well, like parents especially, there's just sort of this constant anxiety that and guilt, like, I should be doing this thing, or like, I need to use my time productively, right? So there is no I shouldn't sit down and watch a television show or go to a movie or read a book, because I need to be like in the studio. What am I doing? If I have this time, then I need to be like making something, or I need to be like super present with my kid, or, you know, or without, you know, whatever else. So there's this like hyper organization and like focus, need to focus on everything. That means that there's like a lot, there's no time to relax, you know, and just when like I relax, I'm anxious about relaxing. So I'm like, because I should, what am I doing here? I should be being productive. Mm-hmm. So, and I mean, part of that is also like, just the, like, beyond an artist mother thing, and it speaks to like the, like, capitalism in mm-hmm. society that we live in, and this like focus on productivity. But yeah, I mean, I think that's something that particularly mothers and creative mothers and people who are juggling a lot of roles deal with. So, yeah.
Sandy, anything you want to say about that tension of being an artist and mother, and how maybe you've had to compromise in certain areas because of it?
Yeah, so for me, I have my kids in my 20s, so... and I have my children back to back. They're pretty close in age. There was no time to really focus on art the way I wanted to, because I was too busy trying to earn a living. Mm-hmm. So when I started school in my 30s and pursuing what it is I wanted to do, it was still a struggle. Mm-hmm. But... again, I still was creating, but I wasn't creating in the capacity that I am now, mm-hmm. you know, stepping away from the 9-to-5 job and not having, I don't want to say not being instrumental in parenting, because that's not what it is. It's like, you know, now they're older, you know, they see their father, they spend more time with him, they don't need me to hold their hand or take them to the park. Mm-hmm. So it does free up my time to be more creative. Mm-hmm. But the funny part is that I was saying, like, you know, I should monopolize my time now that, you know, they go to the park and they out doing things. I want to utilize that time in the daytime. Mm-hmm. But I feel that I've been so conditioned to painting at night that it only feels comfortable to paint at night. And that kind of, like, you know, has me focusing on my illustrations or my digital content during the daytime and still trying, opting to paint at night for whatever reason. But just being a mom and an artist has allowed me to also give my children, you know, the arts, you know, having them come out to museums and different shows with me and getting, you know, the experience, because my parents didn't do things like that with me. It's rewarding. Mm-hmm. I think that sometimes I would like to separate the two. But even still, I still think of it as my artwork. You know, me being a creator, I created my kids, I create my artwork, and I feel that they are my babies. Mm-hmm. You know, everything that about me, I manifested and I put into my work. And I've just watched it grow, just like my children. And it's like, I'm impressed by that growth, and I'm happy. I am happier. And I know that keeps on reiterating that, but yeah. So,
tell me about artist mother community, not the community of artist mother, but just in your own life. I think the narrative that I often encounter with folks that I meet through this community is that they don't know of other artists who are mothers, or they haven't had sort of present role models in their life. I think there are some exceptions to that, but just, you know, obviously that's part of the work of this community, is trying to unearth those stories so we normalize the experience and we all feel like better about sharing about that part of our identity. But just, you know, for you guys, just wondering if you've had role models in your life who kind of did balance that, or did show you sort of that juggle of being an artist and a caregiver or a parent, and like what that meant either for you to have those models, or what the lack of those models, like how that kind of impacted you. Does anybody want to start? Sandy, go ahead.
So I never really had a community of artists that were mothers around me or anybody in that capacity. However, I just recently came into a friendship, a network of, and a sisterhood with SK Art Space. And even though these artists that I inherited as a community, they're not everyone is necessarily a mother. Mm-hmm. However, I feel like there it's a pride mm-hmm. of women who come together to still help and support one another. So yes, some of my friends are not moms, mm-hmm. but you know, they will step in with information or things to help me, like, you know, school programs that or offering resources but in the arts, or you know, hey, if you want to drop the kids off so that you can go do something, you know, I have that support. Mm-hmm. The women that I do know that are artists, most of their children are pretty young, mm-hmm. and they struggle, you know, with managing their time. Mm-hmm. Of course, I offer assistance whenever I can, because that's you know, we all need it. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was working, I had went to a show on my lunch break, and the artist was, her name was Dinga, mm-hmm. and her work is very similar to Faith Ringgold. Mm-hmm. And when she was talking, she talked about being a mom and being an artist, a black woman and an artist and a mom back then, where you weren't allowed the same resources and opportunities. Mm-hmm. And she talked about how there was a network of her and other women that helped one another and, you know, babysat, or they came together and did, you know, collective mm-hmm. things where they all could focus on their artwork. And I just want to be able to provide that type of community within my network and to other moms mm-hmm. At whatever point in age your child is. Mm. So now that my kids are older, I don't really need it, but I would like to help mm-hmm. others.
Awesome. Jacqueline, role models?
Yeah, I mean, obviously your podcast has been like an amazing resource for artists, mothers. I think when I was pregnant with Poppy, I didn't know how it was going to affect my artwork, but I was doing this residency called the Gaia Wonder Women Residency in Jersey City, and it was like an all female identifying residency, and several of the women in that group were mothers, and it was really great to like hear their experiences and see how that work was sort of manifesting into their work. Someone was like doing work related to breastfeeding, and work, you know, about body image, especially like post motherhood, and then, you know, just more abstract things. But it's, you know, they were super supportive of me as I got more and more pregnant throughout the pregnancy, and I've stayed in touch with many of them. And then also just, you know, sometimes finding people through Instagram has mm-hmm. it's such a weird weird world and real weird space that we live in now, where we can make these connections with people digitally. And there are some women that I'm, you know, other artist mothers that I'm in touch with that I've never actually met in person. But you know, you find each other that way. And then I also think, like, when you're an artist parent, there's something. Sometimes you're in spaces and you just find, like, physical spaces, and you seem to find each other. Mm-hmm. And it can feel like, oh, we're the only adults in the room or something, you know? So, and that was sort of how There's this woman, she's based in Chicago, Meg Duguid, and she's an amazing artist. And we were both doing work at the Satellite Art Fair in Miami Beach, which was like this kind of crazy participatory art fair, and it was like a lot of, it's great, but it was, you know, a lot of like young 20-somethings who were like getting drunk and making their art, and it was cool. But we were like, okay, like, you know, it was like, oh, let me find the other mom. Like, we're both here. We were like, we're both away from our 2-year-olds and kind of stressed out about that. Mm-hmm. So, and through that, actually, that was how I initially met Alex Peck, too. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of like, oh, we're at this party, and we're the ones who are like, you know, check in for message from our little ones. So I feel like you can kind of you find community and role. You find the other artists, the artist parents. Like you just sort
it's
of
a
find
vibe.
Them. It's a vibe. Yeah, totally. It's a vibe, and you gravitate toward them. And I'm finding them like now even on the playground at my daughter's school. And like so it's great. Like. Yeah, and it really helps to have that community. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Tamara, anything you want to share about role models or other artist mothers who've been an influence in your life?
Yeah. Like Sandy, my mom has always wanted me to be a nurse, you know, so that was not like literally a nurse.
And he's like, what is that?
Recently, you know, I mean, not recently, but. Ever so often, you can always go to nursing school, you know. And so that was not a direct role model. My mother is not an artist, you know, that would not. And mentors in my life, as I kind of mentioned before, not moms. But at this point, you know, one really awesome thing at being at this artist residency is that the Roswell residency is so family friendly. It's a year long, so they really encourage families to come. Mm-hmm. And in fact, if you have dependents with you, you get an extra stipend for those dependents. Mm-hmm. So there have been a lot of parents on the grant lately. And so my son has gotten to grow up with having other artist kids show up, and we do babysit trades. Big, I guess, shout out to Masha and Michael Beats and their little boy, Sasha, who's my son's little best friend in Roswell. And Sasha and Henry think that everyone has an art studio. You know, it's adorable. And they talk about, you know, I mean, it's very cute, but I'm not going to list them all, but Kate Turner is a single mom, and she's on the grant with her 2 kids. And so it's really inspirational seeing a lot of artists like be raising their kid, you know, breaking the stigma that mm-hmm. you can't do it. Because mm-hmm. also, most male artists that we will see in the MoMA or whatever have kids. Mm-hmm. And so there's no issue about that. Mm-hmm. It's some idea that as a woman, you have to wear pants and you can't also be a woman, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that maternal instinct, although it wasn't in me, you know, at some point it showed up. And so I'm proud to be a mother and an artist, but yeah.
Okay, one more question, and then I'm going to open it up to the audience. So you guys be thinking about your questions, either for individual artists up here or just collectively. We all know there is no magic formula, no, you know, 2 + 2 = 4 in this journey of figuring out how to make a sustainable life as an artist. And I'm just wondering about your experience about just kind of cobbling together a life for yourself, whether that's financially, you know, just the logistics of like, what is it actually mean to be an artist, and how do I grow my career, and just kind of that nebulous world of the artist identity and the career path and trajectory. like that's all out there and it's really hard and we all understand that. But also there's something so beautiful in there being no formula because we all get to kind of create our own path and we get to make our own way and, you know, kind of prioritize what we value. So I just want to hear from you kind of what, again, with that tension of like, how do you know how to make decisions for, you know, what kind of career you want as an artist and, you know, not kind of just responding to art world pressures or capitalism or other things that kind of come in and want to change your values on that?
I don't know if I have a formula, you know. I'm always trying to figure it out again. And especially, you know, maybe in this age of Instagram for me, it's like there's hope out there and then there's just so much shit out there. And so I think a lot of it is like putting it all away and just finding my voice and like constantly trying to do that. And as much as I, you know, get butthurt about not getting in a show or, you know, like seeing all these amazing artists that live at the residency having their work shipped to London or wherever, you know, like I just have to learn from them and I have to be confident. I write a lot. I also play music. I write music a lot. So I'm always kind of balancing whether I'm focusing on visual or on songwriting. If I don't do that, I've always said it's like I take it all in and I have to shit it all out because if I don't, I get clogged and it doesn't feel good to be clogged, you know? And so that's just who I am. And we want shows. We want our work to get out there. I feel like I create a lot, and I'd love to have that balance. Like I'd love to have a full schedule because that's what I do. But that said, I don't want to be seeking that. You know, I want to be that punk rock soul artist inside me that just wants to make for myself and like. Screw, you know, I mean, I'm not a part of the art world that is the art world. That is a very abstract thing to me, like the money and the, you know, I mean, it's incredible. It's like, we're all kind of not everyone, but poor and figuring it out. And you're selling to people that have just tons of money and they probably don't even understand culture, you know? And so all of it is just so confusing. But, you know, especially right now with the way that women are not respected in this country in particular, it's hard. And so, you know, we don't have school support. We don't have child care support. We don't even get to make our own choices, you know. So we just keep fighting and it feels good to be a part of that message.
Sandy, how are you making decisions for yourself as an artist? Like, how do you know kind of what's the right thing to follow or pursue for your art career?
So, like, I don't have a formula either. I'm just learning from experience. You know, I'm being true to myself. I'm being patient and also gracious with myself. These are the things that I'm learning that it's always going to be a developmental process. I'm never going to stop evolving in my work. And just like I want to emphasize again, being gracious to yourself. You know, I feel the same way you do. You know, you don't get chosen from a show. I don't even like mention if I apply for anything until I get the notification like yay or nay. Because I'm like, ah, it hurts. You know, those silent losses are okay, but when it's loud, it's like, oh yeah, you got to withdraw that. So I don't want to be hurt like that, but I'm learning to be okay with it also. And again, knowing that that doesn't mean that I am not a good artist or that I'm not good at what it is I do. It's just, it wasn't the right fit, or this is not the door that I'm walking into. Mm-hmm. Where one door closes, another one opens. So yeah, no formula. I'm just winging it.
Jacqueline?
It would be so nice if there was a specific formula. Right. Like, this is what I do, do X and Y, and then boom, successful art career. But I think the other thing is that I know you said, oh, I'm not a part-timer. You said, I'm not a part of the art world. But, I've been thinking about it as there are actually dozens of art worlds, hundreds of art worlds, right? And so you just have to find which art worlds you fit into. And so, and also you may move in and out of those worlds. And so I think about how does my work in terms of artist mother, in terms of, I've moved in and out of participatory art, projects and, or textiles or pattern or printmaking, and kind of finding my people and finding my circles in each of those communities, and not necessarily worrying so much about the market-driven art world. I also there's a whole residency world and nonprofit gallery world, and for me, what I would like to be doing, and I try to do through my work at SVA, and I also I just recently left as co-chair of the Services to Artists Committee for CAA, but give platform to other artists and make connections in that way, but kind of build the art world that you want to see or that you want to be a part of. That's my goal, and that's my way of trying to be successful. Not be represented by Zwirner or something. Mm-hmm. That'd be really cool. But
if you're listening,
but. But probably not going to happen. And then also I was thinking about, there's this book called Wintering by Catherine May. Mm-hmm. And just this idea of how you can take time. It's about taking time to rest, right? And how you need that time to rest and nourish. You need the winter before the spring. And so I've been really trying to, not feel guilty if I'm not specifically productive in art making, because that doesn't mean that I'm not nourishing myself in some way. And then that work is, and I need to do that in order to make the work later. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay, who has questions for these artists? Yes, and I'm going to, just so you know, I'm going to repeat the question in the mic so it's on the podcast.
As an artist.
So Kina's question, Kina, right? Just asking kind of how you balance the pursuit of a professional career and sort of these, kind of achievements that we all want, and then maybe not getting those things, and how you kind of bring yourself back to your own vision and your own building of your art career with, obviously these dreams and goals that we all have.
I think that it's, it is about this idea of my tribe, and I guess, being an artist, but also loving art. When I've read something or been in front of something and it just hits me, it's like, I really want to, at some point in my life, feel like I've done that and my people get it too, and I've done something just awesome. And I feel like if I don't do that for myself, I'm not honoring my life journey. I love thinking of the trajectory of a life. I love thinking about birth and death and like the bookends to that story. And so of course there's gonna be times where you're just surviving, you know? Mm-hmm. And then there's gonna be bursts of energy where you're creating. But you know, in a very practical sense, I'll call up my girlfriends and bitch to them and be like, I'm not doing this shit anymore. And then later I'll be like, sorry, I was being such a butt, you know, of course I'm gonna do this. And I'll read some good books, you know, mm-hmm. and I'll just take a break from social media or like thinking about that stuff. And then it feels really good again, mm. you know.
Sandy?
Ooh, that last part is essential. Taking a break from social media, because it will have you second guessing everything about you. I just try to remember like the stories, like Faith Ringel, like she is in her 90s, 80s, and it's like she's just now getting the recognition, mm-hmm. and just reminding myself that nothing is going to happen for me overnight. I just haven't been seen by the right people. I keep reminding myself that this is not the last chapter in my book. I am going to continue because I don't create for others. Mm. I create for me. I want to believe that so much. you know, so it's that's how I just keep myself, you know, level-headed. Honestly, just even still doing the work kind of helps me also. It's like, I'm screaming in my work, you're not noticing me, look at me, mm-hmm. you know? And it's that's how I get it out, that's how I get it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, you also, I mean, as you keep making work, you get better and better at mm-hmm. making work, right? And so like, you're better than you were when you were 20, you know, like you're like, if it's like, I've been making work for decades now. Mm-hmm. And so, it's okay. It's like, all right, yeah. Like I turned 41 on Monday. And it's like, yeah, like, it's like nice to think, well, you know what? I haven't peaked yet. I'm like making my way up there. And I loved the Faith Ringel example. And I also think about like Carmen Herrera, who mm-hmm. like didn't have her moment until what, she was in her 80s. But she was just making work. She was in her like communities. She was, you know, still like having these important conversations. And then all, you know, and her moment came just very late in life. So mm-hmm. I think having confidence in that and keeping with it is important.
Judith. Yeah. Maybe you should come up here, take my mic.
Can you do that?
So I'm 74 now, so I just thought I'd throw in a little vantage from the other end of the picture. I have thought sometimes if I could have 5 minutes before I die where I'm like content with where I arrived, and then I'll think, okay, 1 minute. 1 second, you know, because I don't know, you know, all of the, like, it was funny when you said I want to think that, you know, that I'm doing it for myself, but it's just like we're not talking to ourselves, we talk to other people and we sing, you know, for other people, and so we're making art for other people. There is a tough world out there, and if your goal is to be in a certain angle of it and it's not, you know, doesn't come that way, you know, in an even space, like this blueprint where you're just headed there. I don't think there's any end, you know. I mean, you know, mothers are not mothers. This is like pressure and anxiety about it, unless you just stop doing it, and then you're anxious that you stop doing it. And so,
we're all
screwed. Yeah, I don't know, you know. I think mothers have the advantage of being good time managers. And so I think that, like you were saying, being at like an art fair or something where people are running around drinking and you know how to schedule your time and what you're going to get done and stuff. But all of the time management and everything, it just doesn't, you know, this kind of the arts and this goal management without any definite knowing where you're going to arrive or if it's even going to stay with you. You can be doing great and then nobody's heard of you again. So I don't know. I'm still just aiming for that, like, 1 minute.
Not very hopeful, but...
You had a question, Alex? Just to repeat it for the podcast, Alex asked Tamara about her work and the process of taking a photo and transforming it and kind of how your memory and your processing the memory is transformed through the transformation of the artwork.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I think, you know, it's like as a photographer, as a person, I obsessively take pictures and I know it's kind of sick and I do it anyways. And so that is just my way of processing my world, my life. And so with these moments, like I do really ruminate on like certain, I really, my son used to always pinch me like this and I loved it and he stopped doing it recently, you know? And so there's like this almost pain and sweetness. And so whatever that scene is, like if he's pinching my hand, say, I think about that and I think of all those feelings in it. And then there's a lot of associations for me with color and mood. And so like, you know, I think when I was a teenager full of angst, my mom changed everything into these kind of peachy beige colors in the house. And so that beige for me has always been this like, thing I hate, you know, but I use it and I love it. Or, you know, the way that, I don't know, red or blue, like color is so important to me. So that's also such a foundation with it. So if I take that sensation of the touch or that moment, and then I translate it into color and form, it teaches me maybe what I'm actually trying to feel or see or learn. Mm. Mm-hmm. And my work is very painterly, but I will say I fear a blank canvas. Mm. Like maybe a blank piece of paper that I'm going to put words on, but to really start a picture from absence doesn't work for me. Mm-hmm. So I like some foundation to work off of.
Mm. Me too. Okay, we're going to close with five quick questions for the artists up here. It's how I close every interview, just for the audience to get to know you all a little bit better. And we'll start with Sandy and kind of move our way back around the table. Who's your biggest art crush?
Ooh, Wilfredo Lam.
I thought you were going to say Faith Ringgold, but
yeah,
we have many, right?
Ooh, I feel like I want to retract that now. Pass, but I want to say Micheline Thomas is definitely one of, and Dan, can they, you said one, right?
Just one.
Just one. I'm going to go with Micheline.
Okay. Yeah. Jacqueline?
I'm in the boat of not being able to pick one either. I had like a list of multiple people. Number one, I guess I would pick Polly Applebaum. I love like her material exploration and how she like mixes this like sense of formalism with pop culture. So yeah, and just play. It's just so playful. So.
Tamara?
Right now, Louise Bourgeois.
Legend. Okay, favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on, Sandy?
Ooh. Egypt.
Good one. Jacqueline?
I love Barcelona. There's like the architecture, all the pattern, Gaudi. I love it. So,
yeah. Tamara?
By myself with my guitar for about a month.
Anywhere.
And I'm happy.
Yeah. Okay, what film or book has been a big inspiration to you, Sandy?
Ooh. Don't laugh at me. Dirty Dancing.
Great answer. I love that movie. Jacqueline?
Yeah, this is a tough one. I would say probably, it's hard to pick one, but I would say, like, in terms of an author, I think a lot about Haruki Murakami.
Tamara?
I just read On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous by Ocean Vuong, and I loved it.
Okay, favorite meal, Sandy?
Rice and peas and oxtails. They're too expensive, by the way.
Jacqueline?
I'm going to go with dessert. And anything apple-based, like a really good apple pie or apple pastry. So,
Tamara?
A homegrown meal. Mm. Anything from my garden is my favorite.
Okay, and last but not least, just wanting to offer you the space to give a shout out to somebody who has been a big supporter of you and your work.
So I'm going to give you the rundown. I'm going to shout out SK Art Space for always being my community, being gracious to me. Kina, who came down here with me, who was still great. Also, my children, if you hear this, y'all are dope because of me. Don't say I didn't shout you out. Yeah.
They better listen.
Right.
Jacqueline?
Yeah. I mean, I'll go with a cliche, like, shout out to my my husband, Sam Sherman. He gives me the space to be able and the time to be able to do things. I think we do that for each other. So to be able to engage in, our creative pursuits, and my daughter Poppy, and I do think that motherhood really transformed my work in many ways, and inserted even like more of a sense of play there. And so, And then, just really kind of a weird shout outs, but just generally like people from the artist mother community and people who like have been like always like champion, like awesome on Instagram and through like different places, like Mary Tooley Parker. I love her work. I've never met her in person, but she'll like always give me really supportive comments on Instagram, Kate Eggleston, who I do know, and I know she's like a part. She's a part of the artist mother community as well.
I know Kate,
so yeah.
She was in the last show. Tamara, shout out.
My big shout out right now is to my mom, who doesn't understand art, and definitely worries about me for choosing this path. But without her, I wouldn't be doing anything. And also two really past mentors that were really important to me, which it's hard for me to think of my trajectory as an artist without them, would be Norman Locks and Adrian Salinger. And my husband, Larry Bob Phillips, is an amazing artist, and he keeps us in check with what we should be doing. So, yeah, I'm grateful for them all.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. Where can folks find you? Instagram and website, Sandy.
Okay, so my Instagram is a little more complicated. It's The Queen's Artillery, and that's ARTILLERY. My website is a lot shorter. It's just The Queen's Art, so you can, .com. So
awesome, Jacqueline.
My Instagram handle and my website are both The Striker. It's THESTRYCKER. So all the extra letters in there. So it's at The Striker on Instagram, and it's thestriker.com for my website.
Tamara?
My Instagram is at TZibs, T-I-Z.
T-I-Z-I-B-S.
TZibs. And I have a website, zibners.com.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for being here. Thanks to these great artists. And let's enjoy the reception today.
The
Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.